Thank you for your support of Severson Dells and all that you do to help protect the world we share. I'll give you a second. So we have this taxonomy, don't we? Up here at the top, there's us, humans, the best, number one. And then down here are the animals. And below them, we find things like plants and fungi, and then bacteria and whatnot. And then at the bottom, rocks and stones and dirt. That's the way that it works. And we'll make a gradation of animals. There's what we call the higher animals. Bonobo monkeys and chimpanzees and gorillas and dolphins and horses and elephants, animals who can communicate with sounds, who, when you look at them, you can sense a sense of intelligence, that there's a there. And now some of us would put our dog into the category, especially our family dog. Others of us would put the pet cat into this category. Other animals, we'd say, are lower on the scale, driven only by instinct, we think, as if we can tell the inner thoughts of cows or aardvarks, seals, prairie dogs, or even a colony of honeybees. Our society says we are one category of being, a human being, and while they are another category, an animal being. And this is just completely wrong. We are animals. We're one of the higher animals, if you want to use that phrase, but we're animals. We are not so much higher than them as we sometimes delude ourselves into thinking, and they are not so much lower than us as we sometimes delude ourselves into thinking. We are more like them than we care to admit. You know what a cat loves to do? All of us who are cat owners, we know exactly what they love to do. Sleep. Boxes are a good place to sleep, and if the box doesn't fit, you just find a way to make it work. I tell you, if you Google cats sleeping in boxes, you will get thousands of options. This was my favorite. We humans, we don't think we need to sleep as much as cats do, but we're wrong about that. We need our sleep. Did you know that people that get less than 7 hours of sleep a night live on average much shorter lives than those who get more? People who are sleep deprived, whether by a new child or a busy schedule or staying up late to watch television, whatever the reason, people without enough sleep are more likely to catch colds, to get frayed tempers, depression, to become overweight, or be generally miserable. We get jealous of the cat. Hard life, that cat, sleeping all the time. Wish we could do that. You know what? You can turn off the screen and go to bed sooner. Instead of spending your 10-minute break scrolling through posts or playing solitaire, close your eyes and take a cat nap in your chair. All animals need sleep, and we are animals. We have bodies, not just minds. Here's another way that animals are more like us than we know. They are artistic. Decades ago, an elephant in Syracuse, New York, was given some paintbrushes and paper. Turned out he loved to make art, and he had some skill at it. Strong colors, a sense of balance. Oh, it's all abstract impressionism, of course, but they would send it anonymously. Here's a new artist to art critics, and they would say, oh, it's wonderful. Well, it turns out all elephants like to paint. Here's one. Doesn't matter if they're in zoos or in the United States or in Thailand or wherever, all elephants love to paint. We sometimes think that we are superior to animals because we have spiritual feelings, a religious nature, when they do not. Now, it's true that we have built temples and written out scriptures, and we have priests and monastic orders, and animals don't have those things. So we might have religion, while they don't, but spirituality, they've got. What is spirituality but the feeling of awe? In his book, The Souls of Animals, Gary Kowalski relates the story of a monkey observed walking through the jungle, carrying home some food, a coconut or something he had grabbed, and at the moment he reaches the top of the ridge, the sun is just setting, and the sky is glorious, pink and purple and awe-inspiring. The monkey stops and watches the sun go down. He stands there 15 minutes enraptured, as we would be if we would lift our eyes and see. And when the sun dips out of sight and the moment passes, the observer sees the monkey leaving his food on the spot, still in awe, walks home. Or perhaps you think spirituality is evidenced in ritual. Well, elephants cover their dead with branches and dirt and stand vigil beside them for a while before walking on. Or in compassion or devotion. Hawkeye is the dog. His master seems like the wrong word, doesn't it? His interspecies friend, Navy SEAL John Tumelson, lies in the flag-draped coffin. You search for this image, you'll find dozens like them. Kowalski tells the story in his book of a set of terns, seabirds, one injured by a hunter, the other to lift it up and carry it to a rock. And when the hunter comes closer to retrieve his kill, they pick up their friend and carry it to a rock farther out to sea. Poets and authors have long noted that nature is red in tooth and claw. That's the phrase of Tennyson's, praising our human ability to rise above our animal nature, to have a more civilized society. Really? Yes. Prey hunt predators. But once the lion is satiated, the lamb could indeed lie down next to her. Not even the great white shark will kill for fun, if threatened or surprised or if hungry, but not for fun. It is us humans that have fallen away from the circle of life, who harm one another for ideology or fear or power or for kicks. We have seen too much of that this week, but it seems we could say that of any week, whether the violence captures national attention or goes unremarked upon, part of the background in Syria or South Chicago or some other corner of the world. If we want to learn more about compassion, spending time with animals might be a good idea. There's a reason that folks who have experienced trauma often find healing with a dog or through a therapy horse riding program. Have you looked into the eyes of one of these therapy horses? I know that some of you have. Some of you train them. You can't see them. You can't and still think that we humans have the market cornered on compassion or love. In fact, when we humans do respond to one another with genuine compassion, it is because we are animals. It's not because we have rationalized compassion as this appropriate social response. It is because we look into the eyes of another and see their life and dignity, our brother and sister. The first responders who ran into the smoke and screams didn't think, should I or shouldn't I? What would Kant do in this situation? They responded with love and compassion, a power that we share with many other animals. Part of being a compassionate being, a being who loves, who cares, is that we feel grief. This is part of being spiritual too. And folks have long claimed that we humans, unlike all other animals, have foreknowledge of death, and that this fact is what makes us different from them. But who says that other animals don't know that too? We don't know what they think. Coco, the gorilla who learned to sign, once had a kitten who she called All Ball. Do you know this story? When All Ball got out one day of the research center, she was tragically hit by a car and died. When the trainer signed to Coco that All Ball had died, Coco was first in shock and then in denial, just like we people do. And then she wept and cried and grieved. Later, they asked her, "Coco, what happens to gorillas when they die?" And she signed back the signs for comfortable and whole and bye. Comfortable, whole, bye. Animals die all the time among other animals. Do we not think that other animals know that such will happen to them too? What arrogance on our part. Just because we are the only animals who seem so hung up about death doesn't mean that we're the only ones who are aware of our own mortality. Speaking of hang-ups, we could learn a lot from our fellow animals about sex. Again, we have this story in our head. We think that most animals don't make any social commitment to each other. They just get it on. Wham, bam, and not even a thank you, ma'am. We humans, on the other hand, we mate for life and do so for pure reasons. When we think about passionate or wild sexuality, we think of animals. Some of you know that song from a few years ago, "Let's Do It Like They Do It on the Animal Channel." You know that? This is wrong on both counts. It's too dismissive of the commitment between animals, and it's too Victorian a sentiment about human beings. It's true that many animals have what we can only call a very transactional relationship with their lovers, nasty, brutish, and short, as the saying goes. But other animals are tender and sweet to each other. There's courtship and compassion. A few animals enter lifelong partnerships, like the gibbon monkeys and swans and French angelfish, some species of termites, believe it or not, and of course, turtle doves. Once these animals mate, they stay together through their lives. Notice that we humans are not in the list of animals who universally enter these lifelong monogamous pair bonds. Lifelong sexual monogamy between humans as the rule, as the expectation for everybody, is an invention of Victorian culture. And it isn't found in many of the cultures around the world or in human prehistory or, frankly, in the actual behavior of many human beings anywhere. Maybe you've heard about the bonobo monkey, our closest genetic relative. The bonobo live in groups with a few males and a few females, and they spend their days and their nights sleeping and eating and grooming each other and having a lot of sex with each other, all the adult females and all the adult males. And this practice draws the group closer together, and it produces feelings of relaxation and low stress, and it makes the whole troop responsible for all the children, since nobody knows whose daddy is whose. As it say, it takes a village. The bonobos are very happy creatures. Some anthropologists believe that one of the reasons our culture has so many problems with sex, sexual violence and pornography addictions and families torn apart by infidelity and so on, is because we try to act like gibbon monkeys or turtle doves when we are genetically and historically designed to act like bonobos. I could offer you plenty more examples of our animal nature and the impressive nature of animals. What I hope that you see is this, that being an animal as we are is not a bad thing. It's a good thing. The animal kingdom is diverse. There's mendacity and drudgery, but there's also glory and play and life and love. Sometimes our best instincts to be compassionate, to enjoy the natural world as a source of awe, to play, to rest and enjoy life without forethought of grief, to protect our young. Sometimes our best instincts are those we share with our interspecies cousins. There's a reason we call them instincts. So what does this have to do with Earth Day, with protecting the environment, with being good at ecology? Two things. First, I hope that it will make you more appreciative of animals, that they too have a moral claim upon us. René Descartes believed that animals were just biological machines, soulless, and that it did not matter if we abused them. But Descartes was wrong about that, as he was about so much else. How we treat animals says something about our moral character. Our kindness to them individually matters, ensuring that we do not use them for things like cosmetic testing or dogfighting and so on. This is important. Some with this knowledge will be vegetarian, and there is nothing that you could do, not driving a Prius, not turning off all your lights, nothing you could do more for the earth and to slow climate change than to eat less meat. And if you do eat some, as I do, and many of us still do, you can still make important choices about this, to avoid beef from factory farms, for example, and to just eat less. Most Americans eat way more meat than anyone needs. Treating animals well is also about preserving habitat, so supporting places like Severson Dells where the monarchs can come, and trying to stop sprawl and deforestation. All that is important. But the other point I want to make is this. One of the ways that we could do more to protect animals and the environment, and at the same time to make our own lives better, is to act more like animals. When another animal in the wild has enough to eat, they stop eating. Animals use as much territory as they need and not more. They sleep when they are tired and play when they want to and love one another according to their nature and not according to an imperialist ideology. If we spent less time trying to rise above our nature, maybe we'd be a lot more in harmony with ourselves. I'm not a radical about this. You're not going to find me living in the woods behind the church with nothing but my wits. It's not going to happen. But don't you feel like sometimes we're out of balance? Like we're trying too hard sometimes? Embracing our place in the circle of things as one hoop among many hoops is a way that we can be in better balance, in better harmony with ourselves and with the earth, our home. The otter stares at the poet, wondering, why? Why don't you get in the water? It's lovely. Sometimes, we need to let go of our pretensions and see ourselves for who we are and see ourselves for a member of the family of life, not higher, not lower, sometimes the same, sometimes different part of life. As the poet and the naturalist Wendell Berry put it, in words that seem written for this moment, for this week, for our lives, he said, "When despair for the world grows in me, and I wake in the night at the least sound, in fear of what my life and my children's lives may be, I go and lie down where the wood drake rests in his beauty on the water and the great heron feeds. I come into the peace of wild things who do not tax their lives with forethought of grief. I come into the presence of still water and I feel above me the day-blind stars waiting with their light. For a time, I rest in the grace of the world and am free. I invite you to rise in body or spirit. We'll sing together, Blue Boat Home.